Education and Healthcare Reporting on SDPB is supported by Regional Health, helping patients and communities live well.
Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Stuttering is a complex disorder that affects more than 3 million Americans. Around 5% of children have periods of stuttering. Plenty of adults continue to face fluency challenges as well. Yet stuttering is still largely misunderstood. This week is Stuttering Awareness Week. Jane Fraser is the president of the Stuttering Foundation. It's a national organization headquartered in Memphis, Tennessee, and she joins us on the phone now. Jane, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's a real pleasure to be here.
Let's talk with what stuttering is and what it's not. Let's start with how do you describe what it is?
What it is. Well, I think we all know it when we hear it, but as you know, it's a communication disorder in which the flow of speech is broken either by repetitions like that, or prolongations like I just did, or what we call blocks. So I'll demonstrate one of those. That was a hard block where my tongue was pushed up against the roof of my mouth and I sat like that. So that's extremely difficult for people who stutter because there is no sound coming out. You know, as long as you're repeating things, you kind of feel that you're maintaining your audience. But when you're caught in a block, and that is the way people who stutter feel sometimes, it's very, very scary.
Yeah, that was my next question, which is how does it feel when it's happening to you?
Well, many people compare it with being in a car in the middle of an intersection on ice, and you cannot put the brakes on. You're just skidding away. There's no way to stop. You have no control whatsoever. And I think that's a great analogy. That's really got to be the way it feels.
All right. What is it not? What is stuttering not? Let's talk about some of those myths of what people think it is.
Well, it's certainly not. You don't stutter because you're nervous. People who stutter are really just as normal as other people. I think that one of the myths most certainly is that people who stutter aren't very smart. And I think nothing could be further from the truth. We know that an awful lot of very, very intelligent people stutter. In fact, the intelligence might play a role. You know, with little children, we see that if you have a 2 or 3 year old that has a very advanced vocabulary, that can certainly trigger some stuttering. So, you know, their motor skills are just not up to their vocabulary skills or the amount of vocabulary that they have. Mm. So, you know, it is just absolutely the most complex thing we do to speak, 45,000 neuromuscular events per second. So when you think about it, the real miracle is that we can talk smoothly and that we are fluent. Many of us are fluent. I think the other really interesting thing about stuttering is that nobody does it all the time. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, you know, if you do something all the time, it's easier for physicians and scientists to pinpoint it. When it only happens under certain circumstances, it's a lot more difficult to pin it down. So there's no doubt but what it is the most complex problem out there.
Let's talk about what causes it. Is there a genetic component? Where does it come
from?
There
is a huge genetic component. 60 to 80% of all people who stutter have a family member. My father stutters. My uncle stuttered. I have first cousins who stutter. So genetics plays a big role. Child development plays a big role. How does that child develop? Does that child have other language problems or developmental delays? If so, that child might be more likely to stutter. Neurophysiology plays a role, too. People who stutter process language and speech slightly differently. It doesn't mean they don't process it. They do, of course, but slightly differently. And so they have this this difference that they need to get control of as little ones. So in other words, their speech may not come as easily and as quickly as some children. And I think a good comparison is sports. I mean, some kids can throw a baseball and and they do it from day one, and they're fabulous at it. And another child might practice every day to throw the baseball and still is having trouble doing it. So I think just like everything else, some people's talents lie in one place and some in another.
I want to talk about, you know, children who are stuttering and sort of how parents and teachers, daycare providers should approach it when you sort of first hear what you think might be stuttering in a little kid.
Well, I think as a parent, the most important thing to do right away is to acknowledge that the child might be having difficulty. So if a child falls down and skins his knee and he's bleeding, you'd immediately say, oh my goodness, look at that. And so if a child goes like that and mommy doesn't say anything or daddy doesn't say anything, the child immediately thinks, this is so bad she can't even talk about it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important to say something to the child like, talking is a big job. You know, sometimes we all have trouble getting words out, and depending on the circumstance, answer something like, I have time right now, or I'll have time in a little while to listen to what you have to say. So taking off some of that time pressure and letting the child know that you heard it, you're not, you know, and I think that kind of defuses. You know, I can see that a parent might have a real look of horror on their face when they see that child struggling like that. And, of course, that sends the message to the child right away. What I did was so awful that mom just looks scared.
Right.
I think that's what you're looking at with the very, some children have very sudden onsets. And I'd like to hasten to say that most of those children with the sudden onsets are the ones that actually get over the stuttering more easily rather than the ones that gradually get worse.
Right.
I think the other thing is try to increase the times that you give your child undivided attention and are really listening. And that doesn't mean changing your discipline, doesn't mean stopping everything, because your life would be a nightmare if you turned around every time that child opened his mouth, especially a 2 or 3 year old, because some of them are talking all the time. So I think another thing that before we go any further, I would like to say that everything we do for the child who stutters is also good for all your children.
Mm, right.
So increase the times that you give each child your undivided attention. And that it doesn't mean all day. It just means finding that time when that child has something really important to tell you.
And also important to say it's not your fault. As if your child is stuttering, that doesn't mean that you didn't listen. It's just these are some of the early interventions. When do you know as a parent?
Very important to let parents know It's not their fault.
When do you know?
I think that affects their behavior right from the get-go.
Yeah. When do you know as a parent that you need extra help for this kid, that there's some, you need to find a professional?
Well, you know, I get answered that a lot. And I just think parents intuitively know. And you may go to the pediatrician, and unfortunately your child is just perfectly fluent that day. But you know. And so I say to parents, well, if the child says, I want an ice cream cone, that's one thing. If the child says, I want, that tells you right away that that child is in trouble. The extent of the involvement, the force, you know, that the child's using. So I think your ear tells you right away that that child has gone beyond just the I want an ice cream cone. And so at that point, you definitely do want to look for professional help. And, you know, one of the things that we do offer at stutteringhelp.org, our website, is a 15-minute film done by people who specialize in working with preschoolers, giving parents something they can do right away on day one. Mm. So while you're waiting to meet with a speech pathologist, you can feel comfortable that you're already doing the right things. And I think when you're focused on doing the right things, it certainly calms down your anxiety about that child.
Let's talk about adults, because most of us know at least one adult who has fluency challenges. What are some of the things that adults do, whether it's, you know, what you would encourage them to do or not, to sort of compensate for what they see as a, you know, a gap in communication?
Well, I think Many of them choose a vocation where they think they won't have to speak. And, for example, accounting. We've spoken with many people who have gone into accounting because they think, oh, I'll just be working with numbers, I won't have to speak. And then they get the big promotion and discover that, lo and behold, they can't have that supervisory position. And a lot of them get into therapy at that point. There's no doubt but the more open you are about your stuttering, the less pressure you have not to stutter. So I think, you know, for example, even going into a job interview, right out, off the bat, say, you know, I'm a person who stutters, so this job interview situation is tougher for me than it would be for most people. And then I think the surprise for many people who stutter is then they go through the interview and they haven't stuttered at all. I just think, you know, letting the cat out of the bag is so important. And also talking openly about it with your family and friends. The places where we really see problems are when the parents are so mortified that they don't tell the uncle and the aunt. They are trying to hide it. The child knows that his parents are hiding it. Or for an adult, and we have heard from people and still hear from people that say, Jane, you know, our friends don't know that we stutter, and we really appreciate it. If we don't want to be on your donor list, we don't want our names on your donor list, we don't want people to know that we stutter. This is from 60 and 70-year-olds. So there's still a stigma. I think there's less of that with younger people because I think we are now just talking openly about these things. If you're talking with a person who stutters, I think it's also really important, don't give them advice like slow down or take a deep breath or just relax, because if it were that easy, they would have been doing it. So, and I think also let them know you're listening to what they say. Focus on their message and maintain eye contact. And, you know, again, this is good advice for everybody and every listener.
Right. You mentioned, you know, people, the sense of stigma or shame. And let's talk a little bit about if a child or an adult is struggling with this, they can go to sort of, you know, extreme measures to not be heard. And that means that you have no voice. So talk a little bit about this notion of, and I was reading on your website the story of someone who, you know, when people would ask him where he was from because he was afraid of stuttering and the word Delaware, he would just say, I forgot.
Devastating. And in the classroom, imagine. Yeah.
Denying sort of that you have anything to say at all. So this is a day-to-day problem, but it's also a pretty broad thing about your own right to be heard about your opinion and what you might think needs to be said at work or even what you want for lunch.
Very profound. People that couldn't say hamburger, for example, would choose something else at lunch. You know, one thing that has happened, of course, is the internet. Now, the more you avoid, so in other words, you can email a girl and ask her for a date because the thought of asking somebody on a date or going out or whatever is terrifying. There are other ways, but of course, the more you avoid speaking, the more it's a problem. So the people who make the best recovery are the ones that decide they're going to go into sales. And, you know, that they're talking constantly. And the more you hide, the more you avoid. It's just it's a paradox. You know, you think you're escaping from it, but actually you're actually making it worse by hiding it. So really, number one ground rule is let people know. And I think the people that manage to do that and take such courage, but people who do that, feel a tremendous sense of relief. And it may take years.
Tell me what treatment or progress looks like. So, you know, being open about it, you know, we've given advice for people who are listening. What about if you are stuttering? How do you seek
and
help?
Listening to this show.
Yeah.
Well, we actually have a self-therapy book online, which was written by my father in his 70s. It's been translated into 26 foreign languages by people who stutter. We never paid for a translation. They translated it because they wanted other people to be helped. So obviously it's my father. I feel a little embarrassed about saying it's a wonderful book, but it is, and it gives people guidelines. And many therapists I know, if they can't work with an adult who stutters right away, they will give them a copy of Self-Therapy and just say, you know, read and study this while you're waiting to get on my waiting list, while you're coming up to where I can help you. I think the therapist serves as a coach, but the true victory in this case is the person who stutters, tackling that problem, getting out. One of the latest theories or things that people work on is cognitive behavior therapy. And I'll just give you a quick example. If you stutter and you think to yourself, well, you know, I can't go to Starbucks because there's no way I can say coffee. Everybody will laugh at me, not just the barista, but all the people in line behind me. I just don't want to try. So then in therapy, you would go with your therapist, and maybe at first the therapist would be the one to go up to the counter and say, I'd like a cup of coffee, and tell the person who stutters, look around and see if anybody's laughing. And so in that way, you begin to realize that they aren't laughing. Or if they are, so what? So in other words, building that sense of desensitization, getting that ability to see that the world isn't quite as awful as you thought. And the other new therapy is solution-focused brief therapy. And that kind of, you say to the person, what would you be doing if you didn't stutter? Well, you know, I'd be doing this, I'll be doing... Well, let's just try to do that. Let's see what happens if we do. And I think that, too, is the other thing about solution-focused brief therapy is looking for signs of improvement. So, you know, a person might come to the therapist, and the therapist will say, well, what went well this week? Don't ever say what went wrong. Mm-hmm. What went well this week? And teach the person to focus on, well, for the first time ever, I went into Starbucks and I ordered a cup of coffee. And I think helping people realize what success looks like, that is success. And then maybe next week you could go twice. And then maybe you could order not just coffee, but coffee from Kenya. You know, make it more difficult for yourself. So those are the small steps. They seem small, but actually they're giant steps. Hmm.
Jane Fraser is the president of the Stuttering Foundation. You can find more at stutteringhelp.org. And Jane, we appreciate you for joining us this Stuttering Awareness Week. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much.